Welcome to Seeking Alpha, the podcast where we're diving deep into crypto, careers, and the chaos of modern dating. I'm Larissa Bunziak.
And I'm Lindsay Poss. Together, we're two women who somehow found themselves at the intersection of crypto Twitter, Silicon Valley, and Tinder.
All right, welcome back, bitches and ladies. Here we are from the throes of my apartment building and Lindsay's rental home.
Yeah, we never know where I am. We're recording late for me. That's also why you're getting nice little hair tie, glasses look.
Classic. Always throw on the glasses. It makes it better. Or not.
I totally agree.
Okay. So in episode 10, I mentioned that in London, I met a man and we had very intense 1 month of texting, calling, etc., and then met up and went our separate ways. I was in London this past week and did not go there with any intention of texting him or meeting up with him. I didn't even register that he was there until I got there and was reminded of him. So I texted him and we met up. Shocker.
Because what?
I did not think that he would, one, return my text, or two, agree to meet up. This was like towards the end of my trip that I texted him. He was going to be in London for an hour that day before getting on a bus to like somewhere. So we met up at the train station at a champagne bar. And I show up like super sweaty, like because he only had an hour and I was coming from something else. And that train station is fucking huge. I see him and I'm like, I'm really sweaty. And he was like, it's okay. I feel tense too. And I was like, bitch. The only thing that's tense here about me is the fact that I just hauled ass here for 30 minutes.
Yeah, he may have misinterpreted that one a little bit.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm surprised that you agreed to meet me. And he's like, why wouldn't I? I was so happy to hear from you. And I'm like, oh, I don't know, because we haven't spoken since November. Nothing.
He sort of half ghosted-ish, kind of?
Yeah.
It was weird.
It ended like we had plans to hang out all the time that I was in London, but we hung out the first night and then the next day our plans fell through and then I never texted him. He never texted me after that. And so I said to him, this is strictly curiosity, but I need to know what the deal breaker was on your end, because I obviously know from my perspective why I didn't want to see you, but I have no idea why you didn't want to see me. And he was like, there was no deal breaker. I was having a really intense family time, especially that weekend. And this was the worst part. His eyes started welling up with tears. And throughout the conversation, they welled up 6+ times. His eyes, like,
going through some things.
His eyes got all red and whatever. And I was like, bitch, if you shed one of those, I'm taking this champagne bottle and leaving. Because that is not what I thought, like, I wanted him to give me, like, I had something in my teeth. He didn't like how much I was working. Like, I don't know. I was like, okay, I'll go first. I didn't like that you let me split the bill. And he was like, you offered to split the bill. And I was like, yeah, because I didn't think you would accept. But
oh, also, you can't do that. That's a game. I don't like that.
Well, I was doing it out of politeness. Because
yeah, but you have to, like, don't be just polite for no reason. That's confusing.
Okay, fair. Normally, yeah. 9 times out of 10, I would agree with you, but it's, like, awkward when the waiter comes with the bill, and I'm not just going to, like, sit there, like, expecting him to pay, but I also don't want to pay. And so, anyway.
No, you can't play the game. Okay. I'm always, like, I'm very upfront. I'm like, listen, I would love to let you take care of me if that's the thing that you want to do. If not, I'm fine splitting the bill.
Okay. I'm going to continue playing in the game, but I respect your perspective on this.
No, normally, because it's confusing.
Normally, I'm very anti-game, but, like, I'll offer to split the bill. That's as many games as I will play. And so I went full anthropologist, was like, I am Jane Goodall. You are the Bunkies. Do something. And he fumbled and gave me nothing. And so I have nothing interesting to report. Most importantly, I learned that it is not Moe, it is Moet, because it is not French, it is Dutch.
Okay, well, I still want to call it Moe because it sounds nice. Anyways, I have no appropriate segue, but I want to talk about Roblox.
Okay, enlighten me, because I know nothing about Roblox other than it is a gaming thing.
So it's basically a platform where folks can go in and develop their own games and you can play them all on Roblox. So it's like a universe more than just a gaming platform. So the first thing is that Roblox isn't like one game, it's a bazillion games.
So you create
a character, log on to this universe, and then you can go and create and play games in that universe.
Like Neopets, kind of, but you couldn't create games on Neopets.
Correct. Yes, but there's a lot of different things that like that happen in there. So Roblox provides that base infrastructure for gaming experiences, and then developers come in and build games on Roblox. They use its engine, its economy, and its distribution services. I was like, this sounds like a layer one. So the reason why I was thinking about Roblox is because I was at this family barbecue of a friend's out in Southern California, and the youngest child was playing a game called Steal a Brain Rot, which is how I got to learn about the fact that all of the TikTok weird brain rot stories have actually made it over onto Roblox to create this huge game. Sometimes there's up to 5 million concurrent players. And the whole game is basically run around and you try to beat up people and you try to steal their brain rot from them. Brain rot characters include such things as Skibbity Toilet, Ballerina Cappuccina, and a character called Five Tongues, who was once in a relationship with Cappuccina Ballerina, but then left her and cheated on her. And
did he burn one of his tongues?
I hope so.
On her cappuccino.
Anyways, It was wild to see this feedback loop in action of weird TikTok cultural brain rot trends. And then this gaming platform getting involved and like someone just building that thing over there. And then it feeding into this massive game that like went viral on TikTok with kids literally crying over losing virtual characters. There's like a whole economy built in, all of this stuff. But it reminded me of meme coins. I was like, oh my God, Roblox has the layer one where people can build apps and they have a meme coin launcher that is TikTok. How crazy.
So Roblox is Ethereum for 12-year-olds.
But the thing is, Roblox has done more onboarding. This is actually what made me think about this because we talked so much about the onboarding problem and like people don't get crypto, blah, 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 blah. So this is effectively a layer one. But this one has 380 million active users, 89 million daily active users, 2.5 million active developers across 170 plus countries, 40 million plus in games and experiences available on the platform, and generated $3.6 billion in revenue in 2024.
Okay, that's insane. So 89 million people need to find something better to do with their time.
Oh, get over it. Everyone in this, our whole economy is built on a bunch of people betting. Just let people play games, Larissa.
Okay, fine. Fine. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a level up in brain rottery from Mirka Chase, which is what I used to play on Neopets. But
something like that.
So are the kids using money in any way on this?
Yes, there is an entire in-game economy. It's all based on Robux, which is like the currency that's used there. Robux has become like one of the most popular gifts to give kids, especially at their birthday. Like they want Robux. Robux is like an economy all on its own.
It's very interesting that they haven't partnered with an L1 crypto because gaming in crypto had such a moment.
It did.
Blockchain-based gaming.
The thing is, like, Roblox never had a reason to. So developers do get paid in Robux, and then they are expected to convert them over. By the way, 410 million paid to developers in the first 6 months of 2024. And I know we've talked about take rates before. So, like, take rates is, like, the amount a platform takes from a post or something that's created from user-generated content on the platform. Instagram and TikTok, for example, have almost 100% take rate. The only way to monetize content that you put on those platforms is through sponsorships. It's not like the platform itself rewards you for having a viral piece of content. But Roblox, its take rate is about 71% to creators. And that is one of the things that really motivates developers to be on the platform. I was actually just talking to your dad the other day, and he's like, yeah, like my daughter's super into Roblox. Like she goes and plays this game where you just listen to other people play the piano and you give them Robux. Like you tip them based on how good they're playing the virtual piano. Like there's literally busking. Like there's busking in Roblox.
I guess every generation has their thing. I mean, why couldn't Neopets be monetized? Then I could have been a millionaire at age 12.
I'm just, you know, as someone who put Labubus on chain, I am just waiting for the Labubu economy to take off, which that's a story for another time. But
I saw somebody
do on-chain verified Labubus.
Do you have your Labubus Halloween costume picked out yet?
No, but I was part of the surgical procedure the other night to give a Labubu a BBL and also to add some nice makeup to its face. And we're considering nail extensions for that one too.
So. Okay, so you got to get her right before you get a costume.
It's yassified, yeah. Mine doesn't have a BBL. She's perfect the way she comes. But yeah, so I want to go back to this a little bit because there are some things that I think Web3 and crypto can for sure learn from this. And then there's some things that the game could learn, like this platform could learn from Web3 and crypto. So first, what Web3 can learn, this is mobile first. So 80% of users sign up via mobile, which like automatic win. Again, like we've had this discussion multiple times about onboarding and how do you make it easy to onboard and all this stuff. Make a good mobile app. That's like step one. There's a low barrier to entry, so it's free to play and it's easy to develop, which is probably the reason why there's 40 million plus games. There is also instant onboarding. So there's no like seed phrases, gas fees, none of that. The UX is seamless. Like people are just logging on to play. It's nothing else. It's nothing complicated. And then what they've been able to build, because it's like basically so easy and cheap and free to get on, is they have all of this UGC. Like it scales so fast. The take rate is good. People are on it. It's easy to develop. They have a great developer suite of tools. There's creator incentives that kind of align with the developer interest, as in you can create content on other platforms that then leads you back to your Roblox game and vice versa. You can take content from other platforms and use it in your Roblox game. So there's like actual content built into advertising for Roblox, like damn, in a meaningful way. And then obviously these network effects totally compound. Like again, you're having a TikTok game that's played on Roblox that people then put up TikTok experiences about their time playing on Roblox. And so it's like this like extremely virtuous cycle of like very online. And that also makes it very, very culturally relevant. Like Roblox is always on the newest trend because all of their users are thinking about how they can then create content and capitalize on whatever trend is happening. So like it is crazy well set up for success. I want to also say, not investment advice, but in 2020, I was like, the three things I want to invest in are Bitcoin, Roblox, and NVIDIA. And all three of them have fucking taken off like crazy. And my ex-husband at the time barely put any money into all of them. And we pulled all our money out of the stock market.
That's why Lindsay's our financial guru.
Yeah. The lesson is like, I should probably take more risks with my investments, but I'm still too nervous too.
So that's really interesting about the network effects thing, because in crypto, obviously we've talked about the onboarding the next billion users, and there's no real talk of who those next billion users are. It's never about like onboarding like your friends or the people that you interact with online daily. It's always just like this nebulous cloud of people. And obviously they have built in incentives in Roblox for friends to play with friends. I know that that's what like all the most successful platforms have done.
For me, it also opens up the question of, I mean, we talk so much about financial tools, financial freedom, financial vehicles. Those are obviously not gamified. And in a lot of ways, like I think that's way better. But I do think a lot about Base's kind of new ethos, in that it's trying to create this front end experience where like kind of your financial life and your online life can sort of live in the same place. And they're working on what I like to call this like front end problem, where it's not just UX and UI, which are incredibly important, but also network effects, content, creativity, innovation, all of that stuff also has to be like a hook to get people using a platform. I don't know if it's going to work out. My theory is that it's not going to work out for Base, but I like that they're going more after the let's create an everything platform and create a platform that you can actually have cultural relevance with, and combine that with the ability to control your financial life on that platform. It's maybe not my preferred method, but I think it's cool that they're trying, genuinely.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree with you. Yeah, I think it's going to be another lost cause. I guess they're going in the right direction.
They're thinking about the problem in a real way. And I do think obviously with gaming, in it being like an entertainment, we're talking about a social media, which is an entertainment platform, feeding a gaming platform, which is an entertainment platform as well. So like I see this more as competition with things like Netflix or any type of other kind of content consumption than I do with like financial tools and products, which is traditionally where crypto lives. So it's not like a one-to-one onboarding comparison for sure. But I do just think like, hey, if you make cool shit, people want to try it.
Yeah. And if your kids' friends are talking about brain rot, or if your friends are talking about brain rot, stealing stuff, like that sounds fun.
Well, I also like looking at the developer experience side, and like they figured out how to convert Robux into USD. And like we can't even get like an easy and clear bridge from one thing to another. Like Roblox has figured out bridging better than crypto.
Because developers are all too busy fucking tonguing.
Well, they can. They can do
Princess
that.
Princess Cappuccino.
Yeah, ballerina Cappuccina. or Cappuccino Ballerina. I'm honestly not positive. But I do want to talk about like where Roblox fails too, because I think this is instructive for Web3. So it's not a decentralized platform, which means that you do not own your data. So anything that you build lives on that platform forever. It's not like you can port it over to something else, sell it on Steam, whatever. Whole new experience. That also means you can get kicked off at any time. And you're also locked into like this single ecosystem. Like there's no, like unlike in crypto where we actually can bridge to other chains, like there's no other platforms to bridge to. Part of that is like the network effects reason in Roblox has obviously been so successful, but like then there's things like Minecraft and all this other, like there are other closed system game economies and they do not talk to each other, nor can they ever, because that's not how centralized control works. With that centralized control too, the platform can be banned by governments. So it actually was banned by Turkey. And there has been moderation issues on this platform. I do think that it's cool to think about them as the rails for gaming. It literally aligns fully one-to-one with how blockchain works, but it would be cool to see what those rails would look like in a decentralized environment. So what I learned from this is that anything can be a layer one, but obviously not everything is decentralized. And so really cool to see like the insights you can gain from thinking about any platform like a layer one, but also like makes me believe in the tenets of building with decentralization as a purpose, like even more. So this was a fun thought experiment for this week.
Yeah, I do believe in decentralization strongly, but in limited capacities. Like I know what you're going to say, but I need to ask this question out loud. Is the data component strong enough for a platform like Roblox to be decentralized? Because when it comes to the moderation, the getting kicked off, like if you're not doing shady shit, you shouldn't get banned.
Right.
And as far as like government banning, if they're compliant.
That's not always true, though. I will say with every centralized platform, there are many such cases of folks getting banned or having rights taken away from like the thing that they developed or something like that for reasons that don't make sense. And that's partially because moderation of a large centralized platform is extremely difficult. And partially because it's easier, like it is easy for that platform to have control over things that it maybe shouldn't. Those cases obviously represent a sliver of a minority, and I want to be cognizant of that. But the point is they can kick off anyone at any time for any reason. And that is a dangerous set of tools to give a centralized entity.
I'm cautious about the argument that like everything should be decentralized because like, it just gets unnecessary sometimes.
Absolutely. Part of the issue with a centralized server is not only from a user standpoint, but from a platform standpoint, you're the end reason for all the problems. So when we're talking about people coordinating terrorism attacks or attacks of that kind in the platform, that's Roblox's fault.
Right.
So they face those issues as well. And also when you're talking about a platform specifically built for children, yeah, I may not believe in decentralization as strongly. I think from a developer standpoint, I believe more in decentralization, as in being able to port your stuff over and having complete ownership of the thing that you build on that platform. But I do think that the centralization of the platform and the Rails itself offers a lot of benefits, particularly when you're talking about kids stuff. So it's like a weird, there's ways of like kind of mixing these worlds that I think is really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, clearly you've got a lot to learn from Roblox. Roblox hosts a lunch and learn or some shit.
Yeah. I genuinely enjoyed like digging into this. But to segue, what I'm not genuinely enjoying is my dating life. How's yours going?
Well, I wanted to highlight another story that is not specifically related to dating, but has dating components. But I was on the subway minding my own damn business. And, you know, living in New York or any major city, you just know it's code that when a person starts acting a damn fool, you just let them and you go full British security guard ones with the top hats and just look straight, don't make eye contact, say nothing, whatever. And so this guy, like he had his like shit together enough to like look like he was housed and fine, but he kept waving to me. And so naturally ignored him. And then at one point, because I was seated, he like stoops his head down to my level to make eye contact where I was staring ahead and waves there. And so I did like a quick smile, look away. And then he asked for my hand. And so I instinctively, without even thinking about it and cursing myself that I don't carry hand sanitizer, gave him my hand He was wearing like half a glove, which may have been worse. But anyway, he took my hand and started like slurping on it, like kissing, like meant to like kiss it. Like, it was like the nastiest, grossest.
What? I can guarantee that is not like what I thought you were going to
say.
And
so I snatched it away and looked away again, did nothing. Then he was calling out for me, going, "Miss, miss," from like where he was standing. And this other guy steps in. And not only he like, yes, but he steps in with the whole like, "Miss, miss, is this guy bothering you? Are you uncomfortable? Is this okay?" I'm like, "No, obviously it's not fucking okay. Obviously I'm fucking uncomfortable," but just like, I'm not crying out for help. Like, I'm sitting here, I'm defending myself by ignoring him. And if it required your involvement, like, I would have looked around for help. Like, I can handle myself unless he brought out a weapon or something, in which case I got two. But he was like doing this whole performative thing, like, "Are you okay? Is this man bothering you? Like, blah, blah, blah." And then obviously the guy who was bothering me got into the guy's face and was flinging slurs. And then they got into it. And I was like, "Okay, everybody just stop." Like, yeah. I'll see myself out of this, actually. You two handle it.
Right.
But it like got me thinking about the fact that like, yes, your initial reaction is true, like hero angel to try and help and intervene. But also, I think guys were harped on for so long for not doing anything that now sometimes they do too much and it's like performative almost. Like, this guy clearly wanted to like be a savior, a hero type person in the situation where he could go and tell his friends like, "Oh, I helped this girl out on the train who was being harassed. Like, yes, I was being harassed. No, I didn't need help. It was my problem that he was slurping on my hand, and like, I handled it by snatching my hand away and looking away. And had I needed help, I would have given some sort of outward signal that I did, instead of just ignoring everybody around me. You know what I mean? Or maybe not. Maybe this is a contentious take. I don't know.
It's because, not contentious, because I get it, but I am more of a fan of just letting people have their wins, especially if it helps me out. I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Thank you."
Yeah.
Thank you for fighting my battles for me.
It was like the first guy was bothering me, but then the second guy who steps in and is like, "Miss, miss, is this guy bothering you? Are you uncomfortable? Can I help somehow?" Like, that whole thing is bothering me too. So like, now both of you are bothering me. So just like, bother each other and leave me out of it.
Although it sounds like that's what they did.
Ultimately, yeah. But both of them wanted to bother me.
Right. But then they found each other, and that's true love. So
yeah. And then, now they're getting married.
I'm so happy for them.
Where is the line of guys helping and guys being excessively performative? Maybe you think that there is no line if you're like willing to let people have their wins. But for me, if you're being excessively helpful and going out of your way to make sure everybody knows who you're helping, like, that too is not helpful because it's calling more attention to the situation. I could have easily diffused it by ignoring him, and he would have gone and slurped on something else. Maybe the fucking subway pole. Which would have been fine.
The slurp description is so good.
It was like on my hand. Like, he was trying to kiss it, but was so misguided. God, he needs fucking technique. But I feel like it's a thing where guys will try and be now so performative about. But if it's evident that I'm not in immediate chance of being physically harmed, I want people to mind their own business. And maybe this is the New Yorker in me.
That's the New Yorker in you. No, not really. The performative stuff is annoying, but like, the way that I look at those kinds of situations is if it were one of my friends that stepped off and was like acting and doing the whole like, "I'm an ally, I'm a feminist" kind of thing.
Yes.
Like, I'd have that conversation with him. But when it's a complete stranger and they're acting like that, it's like just someone else's problem to teach that man how to read context clues. So like, I'ma just let him get his little win and move on with my day. Like, it's not your problem to solve that for him. And so it's like, if it maybe diffuses the situation, great. If it makes the situation worse, then like, yeah, you gotta just get up and go to a different subway car and let them duke it out. It's hard for me to picture caring about a complete stranger. Actually, someone asked me this recently. They're like, "Can anyone call you a name that would offend you?" And it was like, if it was someone I cared about that called me a name, I think it would hurt. But then also I would know either that person is having a weird out of character moment, because I don't surround myself with people who do that to me, or I'm truly being awful and I deserve to be called that name in that moment. And then like, with any stranger who calls me anything, it's just like, okay, like, yeah. I don't care. I really don't care about your opinion. And so when people are acting in a way that I think is like proper, I'm kind of just like, that's really for the people that care about you to teach you. And I'm not one of those people. So good luck, Mr. White Knight. I hope being a feminist and an ally gets you far.
Good point. Need that on a t-shirt.
But like, if his heart was genuine and he really like wanted to help you, maybe just to help you, then like, I don't want to yuck that yum out in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely never say anything. I would just passively aggressively talk about it on the podcast.
Right.
I feel like it is a thing though, of guys trying to be this like over performative white knight, but I'm putting it out here.
Funny because like every male friend that I know is like basically terrified to do anything for a woman because they're afraid of like getting accused of doing something. So that was my first thought, was like, wow, he actually stepped in and helped. Like everyone I know is scared right now.
They got to find a middle at some point, right? Like one day they'll get it right.
Well, and like we have to find a middle too of not like criticizing every wrong, which we are not finding on this podcast.
I mean, don't slurp on my hand and don't ask me if I'm all right, if I'm clearly all right. My boundaries are clear.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like the hand slurping one shouldn't need to be said.
Yeah.
But that's where we're at these days.
In New York, you just never know.
Is that the main action you've gotten lately is hand slurping?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, it is. No quickie in the champagne bar at the train station. Although not that I even would have wanted it, to be honest, because like I said, dead in my mind. And once I've killed somebody in my mind, there's no resurrection. Concerningly good at that. Your dating life, no updates?
No, I dated someone on and off for a while now, and it is all the way off. And I am struggling with that, like hardcore. So I did download Hinge. I lasted like a week. I talked to some people. It was nice. And then I was like, yeah, like I don't want any of these people. I want my ex. And so then I promptly deleted Hinge again. I did go to a singles event. There was no one I was particularly interested in, but I also came home being like, yeah, okay, I'm not over my ex. So it's just been a lot of that.
It's a grieving thing too. Like when you lose somebody from your life who was so meaningful to you, it's not as though, well, unless you're mean, can erase people with a magic eraser, but it is really challenging to try and see people in that same light that you once saw your significant other.
Yeah, it's been real rough. I thought that like things would be easier since I have gotten a divorce. And I will say any breakup I've ever had, and even with my divorce, like when I knew it was time for it to be over, I knew and I was ready. With this guy, I just cannot let him go. I know it's not going to work. I know it has no future. And I'm still just like, yeah, wow, maybe we try again. Like, it doesn't, like there's no logic behind it. So usually I've never once returned to anyone. Like, when I'm done, I've been done. And it's not like I'm cutting you off or you're dead to me kind of thing. It's just like that part of my life is over. And with this one, I keep thinking I'm going to reach that point and I just can't, even though I know it's not going to work.
Maybe so. You got to cut him off. You got a magic eraser hand.
I don't know how to do that. Like, it's not like we speak at all. So I'm just full set on the yearning front. It's great.
We'll talk about magic eraser techniques next time.
We will. Rate the pod. Send it to a friend. Send us your breakup stories.
Yeah. Send us some shit. Oh, and if you listen this long, you should be the first to know that. What are we doing, Lindsay, on October 22nd?
Live show at Pub Key in New York. Woo! So come see us live, coming out with us. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah.
Send us topics too. What do you want to hear about live and in person with your girls?
Link, registration, details, stuff to come, but lots of exciting stuff. And we will see you guys in person in October.